We're going to go ahead and get started because I know some people have some obligations later this morning. So, and we have quite a group already. So, hi, Myra. We may have some people trickling in. So, welcome to our introduction workshop on an introduction to podcasting and ASU on iTunes University. My name is Meredith Irvin. For those of you who have not met me, I work for the Applied Learning Technologies Institute here at the West Campus. And today we're actually going to be recording our presentation because we're doing a workshop on podcasting. We thought it would be a good idea to record the presentations and podcast them later for people who couldn't join us today. So the format today will be a panel presentation. We have three guests with us, and at the end we'll take questions or comments from the audience, and I'll come around with the microphone, and if you could wait. Yeah. So joining us today, we have three people. We have Guy Mullins to my right, Director of New Media within Applied Learning Technologies Institute, which you will hear abbreviated as Alt-I probably today, or you may have seen that. To my left, we have Colleen Carmine, Director of Alt-I at the West Campus, and Patricia Clark, who's an assistant professor in the Interdisciplinary Arts and Performances Department at the West Campus. And to my right, we have Dave Luna, who also works with the Applied Learning Technologies Institute, and he is using the equipment today that the West Campus has purchased and will be making available soon for delivery to classrooms for people who would like to record classroom content to podcast. Okay? So, without any further delay, I would like to allow Guy Mullins to begin.
All right. Yeah, I started to shut it earlier and then... Okay. Well, we will do a little bit of ping-ponging, and Meredith mentioned that we were going to do the Q&A afterward. However, with a group this size, I don't know. Look at this. I'm speaking about podcasting 12 feet from the microphone. That works.
Right.
So, yeah, as an expert in podcasting, I'd like to speak 12 feet from the mic. So, anyway, so again, with a group this size, we can keep it more or less informal. And so I'm going to start off with just some basic information about what is podcasting, because I'd like to clarify that. Then we're going to talk with Colleen and Patricia about some applications of perhaps we should say rich media in teaching and learning, because I don't think they're specifically referring to podcasting, but I believe we'll be able to transition in that. And then as we learn both about podcasting in general and iTunes U specifically throughout the day, we can begin to sort of spend our Christmas break thinking how we'll come back next spring and put it all in place. So one thing I'd like to definitely clarify when we speak about podcasting is that it is significantly different than the types of media applications that we've been doing on the internet for, dare I say, 12 years, dating myself a bit. It's not streaming media, and it's not downloadable content from the web. Those are perfectly good applications for rich media, but in my opinion, podcasting is specifically defined by the ability to have a subscription to that media channel. I'm going to say, 99.44% of the podcasts today are audio programs, but that is not the case. That does not necessarily have to be the case. You can podcast video. You can podcast even still photography. And even iTunes U supports PDF files as well. So really, you can deliver media in a subscribable format using podcast technology for a wide variety of purposes. I'm pretty excited about the PDF thing, oddly, but even considering that I'm primarily a video producer, because I find that's a really nice way to add some instructional back-end content to be associated with perhaps audio lecture or interview, that sort of thing. Now, the reason I have this slide up here talking about RSS, that is the subscribable technology that enables subscription to podcasting, and I've been criticized for speaking too much about RSS, and with the introduction of iTunes, it's less necessary for us to think about the specific under the hood technology that allows that subscribing, but it I still think it's worth mentioning that we are talking about media that people can subscribe to, channel that you can subscribe to, and using any podcast client such as iTunes. When new content becomes available on that channel, your client program will download it automatically.
Is this going to be available for us to
the PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Well, certainly. I'll probably embellish it a little bit. It's about 12 hours old, and I think it could use a little bit of images. We'll definitely make it available. And also, I might mention most of the content that is on the presentation that I've got here, and that we'll dive into and probably skip some slides later on today. Most of it comes from our AltI podcasting site, so it's alti.asu.edu, and there's plenty of links on podcasting 101 there. Those links are also available from itunes.asu.edu. So much of the information we're going to cover today is available in one form or another on the web. Anyway, but I just wanted to kind of start with a brief introduction about what is podcasting. Just kind of a quick show of hands. Is anybody consuming or, dare I say, producing podcasting? Right? You're a subscriber? So, can you? So, okay. Okay. Even if you're not subscribing, you're more or less familiar with what podcasting is, or we wouldn't be here today. So. Let me see what else we've got here. We'll go through a couple more slides, and then I'll turn it over to Patricia and Colleen. This basically is just a paragraph we pulled off the web, more or less to describing some general applications for podcasting at ASU. One thing that we'll cover more detail later on is the distinction between what we're calling private podcasts and public podcasts. We've been doing, kind of preaching the podcast gospel for almost 2 years. It kind of surprises me it's been that long. And in teaching people how to do podcasting, first of all, even teaching people what podcasting was over the, in the early months, getting people excited about how they might use podcasting, we often kind of hit a brick wall with, it's fairly simple to think, okay, I want to record a lecture, which might be the very basic application of doing this sort of thing. Perhaps recording a guest presentation, like the type of thing we're doing today. So that's a fairly simple hurdle to get over. And then the equipment is not particularly expensive. This is a fairly mid to high end range of equipment, and it's on the order of $1,500 or so. But it's serving an entire campus. You could simply use a $10 microphone and some free software on a desk personal computer, and you're in business as far as the production of the material for audio specifically. Where we often ran into a brick wall in getting people at ASU involved in podcasting was in finding a place to store the large quantities of media. Even audio racks up quite a bit. If those of you who are subscribing, and a program comes out every day or two, and you 50 megs a piece, that pretty soon you've got a chunk of your hard drive consumed. And we start thinking about building a podcast infrastructure for the university this size. That's even just in audio, that's a lot of disk space. I mentioned RSS earlier. That is a little bit of a tricky thing to put together, the back end mechanism to deliver that feed is what it's referred to as. iTunes, the introduction of iTunes changed all that. They cover both of those obstacles for us. They're providing the disk space to store the media. It is a distribution, not an archive resource. And then they also provide the feed, so we don't have to figure out a way to create that feed. But anyway, so I just mentioned that.
Yes. You say it's not it's distribution, not an archive.
Correct.
What do you mean by that? Is the material then have a certain time period that it's up and available?
Definite maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. The contract. I don't know how far to go down this path because I don't want to step on your all's time.
Yeah, I know.
But the okay, let's rewind a little bit. Apple really changed the landscape of podcasting. I'm going to say maybe last June when they introduced podcasting into iTunes. You may or may not realize it, but podcasting had a good year and a half lifespan before Apple got involved with it. By making the iTunes player capable of receiving podcasts, it really opened up the doors for lots of people to begin. It became so easy to use as a consumer that really changed what, the number of podcasts just skyrocketed. We're not talking iTunes U, we're talking just as a client application now. What it was referred to as a podcatcher, which is almost the worst term other than vlogger. this technology, we haven't quite figured out. Podcasting is a good term, though. In fact, so much so that there's some discussion about maybe Apple thinks it's good enough to own. Where was I going with this? So we signed after about maybe 6 or 8 months. Then Apple introduced iTunes U, which is a resource, as we were mentioning, that for higher education institutions to have the ability to have the stored content and that feed, really making it much, much simpler for educators to now produce podcasting, as I was mentioning earlier. The contract that we negotiated and signed with Apple, which we were really one of the first early adopters. When the news release came out, we saw Stanford and Berkeley and Duke as kind of the case examples. Those are more or less prototypes developed by Apple, I believe. We have been developing our iTunes channel, our iTunes U, and channel's not really the right term, but our infrastructure using emerging and developing tools through this partnership with Apple and ASU. It's been literally a work in progress. There's been code gets written at Apple, then we implement some stuff on our end, and then as well as other institutions, of course. Anyway, the contract refers to a file size limit of 500 gigs, I believe, per institution. That's because they had to put a number on the contract. That is not a hard and fast, however, Apple has reminded us that it is a distribution mechanism. If you're interested in producing a podcast, I would still encourage you to maintain responsibility for archiving and, the care and feeding of your own content. If it's important for, that in 10 years or 10 days or what have you, I mean, this is not to say that things are going to change, but that would be true on with any type of media. If you're going to be putting stuff up, even if you create a Photoshop graphic, for example, you make a print, the print's the distribution. You should still maintain your original files. I would argue the same thing's true with podcasting. Yes. Wait. A question in the back. Dun, da, da, da.
When you said it's 500 gigs, is that per campus? Is that for whole ASU?
We're one university in many places, so. The last time we spoke to Apple, they said that all of the iTunes U institutions, all of the campuses that were using it, had not exceeded that 500 gigs together. So it's not a problem. The bottom line is it's not a problem we're particularly worried about. But the bottom line is, I think it is really our own responsibility to archive, our creations. So, and let me see here. Okay, I won't go here. So, let's turn this over now, and we'll come back to more of a step-by-step guide to creating content on iTunes U or creating a channel, more or less. And also, we can depending on your all's interests what you're interested in, we can even walk through creating a channel if you like. But I'd like to right now have Colleen and Patricia talk a little bit about the applications of rich media in the classroom.
Okay, I'm Colleen, for those of you that don't know me. I'm here today sort of wearing three hats. One as an instructor who has been using audio files in different applications in my teaching. It is really exciting to have iTunes now available to us because anyone that doesn't spend their life eating, breathing, sleeping technology and podcasting the way Guy does found it very hard to figure out how to do RSS feeds, find a server, find those applications, and I didn't want to spend my time doing that. But I did record very easily small MP3 files in applications for my students. A lot of us have been doing research and studying more and more on how this our students are much more visual and interactive and self-motivated in ways that if you do these kind of different media contents, rich media contents for them, they will express appreciation for your providing other means of doing things. So one of the hats was as an instructor talking about rich audio, rich media files that I haven't been able to podcast yet, but that iTunes will allow me to do really easily next semester. The second hat is as a director of Alt-I out here, trying to determine how we can make it easy for faculty to use tools like this. So it's not a struggle every time new technologies and new tools come along. But more importantly, what Alt-I is looking at is, and this is an experiment, this is our first experiment in this, in breaking down technology explorations like this into two different workshops. And the first one is, what is it and why would I use it? And that's what we're doing here today to try to talk about that. And then people who are interested can come to our next one, which is how. And then we do the buttons and the pressing, whatever. But it's really difficult to move a technology into our teaching if we don't have conversations about what, from people who say, yes, it was effective. Yes, it was easy. Yes, it mattered. Here's what I did with it. My third hat, and I'm going to claim that all these hats is why my hair looks like this today, but my third hat is I'm a poor substitute for Alice Christie, who was supposed to be here to talk about this, and she is very sick. So I'll talk a little about what she does, and I'll talk a little bit about what I did and how we're both going to move that onto iTunes U, ASU at iTunes U. I always look at Guy to see if I get, you know, it's a slogan, and you have to get it right, just like one university, many places. ASU at iTunes U. ASU on iTunes U. That's it. It was like the 12-hour-old podcast, PowerPoint. So let me show you really quickly, if I can grab a hold of this, a few things on the web. First, for anyone who's curious, and we'll send this out. Please make sure that when you've signed up, that you have your email address on there, because we would love to send you a request to give us ideas about how this is a beta run, and we're going to do it on all the campuses. So ideas about what we could have done to give you more information in the right format for the what and the why. And we will use your information when we take this on the road. So first,
hey, I am on the road.
Yeah, he is on the road. Alice has a wonderful page about podcasting, but she wanted me to point out to you that she did all this research on why to do it and what it is and how to do it. And we didn't have iTunes U at the time, so she tried to follow the directions on how to use Apple services, which should be pretty easy, to get it up onto a podcasting server. And if she had had more time in the last few days before she got sick, she swears it could have happened. But if it takes Alice days to get her material up onto a feed, then that's not the way we want to go. We want to do this easy one-button kind of podcasting that ASU on iTunes U will make possible. On the other hand, if you go back to the, and I'll take you into my stuff, if you go back into the question of why. Yes.
Can you go back to Alice's site briefly?
Yeah.
Because I can tell by looking at Alice's site that this is a blog engine of some sort, I'm thinking. Yeah, certainly. Actually, it looks. No, I'm mistaken. Yeah, I apologize. I believe this is a templated
Apple
site.
Yeah.
What I wanted to point out though is she's got the feed on there. The way that this is done, or certainly appears very close to being done, is the way that most of the podcasting community does podcasting is they generate that RSS feed using a blog server. You may not be subscribed to podcasting, but you probably have run into RSS subscription in text-based blogs. The addition of enclosed media to the RSS mechanism is what made podcasting happen. And so, as Colleen is pointing out, it's even at its simplest, it's a fairly difficult task to set up a blog, get that feed, get it talking the RSS to technology to generate podcast feeds. But that is the common way to do it, and it's a very popular way to do it. iTunes U changes that for us.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point that out. But
yes,
excuse me.
And makes it much easier.
Nice guy. First thing I saw on that page was subscribe. Can we discuss the cost involved in that?
That's an excellent question, and highlights kind of a common misconception. I stumbled on some of the terminology in podcasting, vlogging, subscribe. You see the word subscribe, you automatically think, ka-ching, how much is this going to cost me? It's subscribing is not the same approach as subscribing for a magazine or cable television. It's just a way to say, I want this program to be automatically downloaded when new content is available. So the term is subscribe, but in iTunes U and in the vast majority of podcasts throughout the world, it's free content. So
many of us are thinking about how to create audio content, why to create audio content, how to plug into our students that are walking around with their iPods in their pockets and their pods in their
buds
in their ears, or even the ones that aren't connected in that way constantly, but are connected to their computers and want to download and listen to it. So I've been creating audio content for them so that they don't have to read necessarily materials that I'm, critiques that I'm doing, ideas that I'm presenting, assignments, reviews, etc. I have them, one of my assignments is they create web pages up on their AFS space here at the university. There's a lot of tricky little steps that go on with that. It's really difficult to read through all the directions, but they're able to listen to an MP3 that I have that... So while they're working through their pieces, I walk them through. I say, did you do this? Did you do that? Did you do that? That kind of thing. I have that as one. I also...
Was that your voice?
Uh-huh.
Very nice voice.
Well, thank you. It's amazing. I got feedback. I also, in their web pages, I have a page out there with links to all of the pages, each person's pages that they created. And then I go through and do an audio critique on each of them. I tell them they can download it to their iPod and listen to ideas about good design and how to improve a website, or they can sit at their desk and listen to my voice and click on the links and look at each person's pages. I mean, that's just some of the ideas that I used for this semester on how to get them more engaged by giving them another format, another way of looking at things. It was very, and here's the nice thing about workshop number two on how instead of why. It was so easy, it was unbelievable, and I expect it to be even easier and more engaging when I don't have to tell them, okay, I've got another MP3 file up for you, but what iTunes will be able to do is they will know whenever they go to their iTunes and sync it with their iPod or go to their iTunes on their desktop, they'll know that I have pushed out another piece to them. And I'm really excited about that possibility. But now I just put it in announcements. They go into my little audio cast file, and they listen to the kinds of materials that I'm delivering. Ellis Christie and Keith Wetzel did a very similar thing with some graduate student projects. They recorded comments, ideas, advice, and it really helps the students to hear in a sort of public way. You know, I didn't record one for each, and neither did I think Keith did on some of his. You could record it and name it with the person's name in a way and do that, but I did a running narrative, and I believe Alice did the same thing, and it's really I think interesting on how we can sort of bring students into the idea of collective critique by them listening to us talk or even the other students talk. Alice had some students, and Patricia will talk about her students doing that, to hear fair and objective sort of critique about other people's work and make them more open to that kind of thing. So that's some of the ideas that we're using for creating audio files. Again, it's very easy to do, and the how-to workshop will talk about that. But just as an overview, you need a cheap $10 headset and free software called Audacity on your computer. You can do it that way. If you have an iPod, I was experimenting with sticking a little attachment to it, which allowed you to record right to the attachment into the iPod, and that's another simple way to do it where I'm not even, you know, you can be recording information or ideas or things after class in your car if you wanted to. So these are some of the fun possibilities that we'll go into in the house. Does anybody... Were you making fun of me when I said record in your car, or were you? Yeah. So, and those are some of my ideas of getting this material, getting your thoughts and materials and your conversations with your students into other formats. Rich?
I'm sorry.
Seamless integration.
Yeah.
I had to do it in front of the room. You can do this.
He's in a panic now.
When you do a podcast that you're doing for several students, is there a way, like on their thing, that they can fast forward without, you know, going
yes.
through it? So they can fast
Absolutely.
Forward.
Absolutely.
So,
can I address that? Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. There are a couple of ways to address that. Certainly, any MP3 player, like a program on a computer, if you're listening to a podcast at your computer, which is a little bit odd, but you can certainly do that. In pretty much any portable MP3 player is going to give you the ability to fast forward. Many of the nicer ones will pick up where they left off, which is kind of a nice feature if you're, you know, listening in the car and you want to stop, get gas on the way home. You don't want to pick up the beginning of a 40-minute podcast again. So that just your simple, you know, fast forward, rewind, pause stuff, that's pretty well standard. However, there's a special type of podcast called an enhanced podcast that it uses a slightly different file format called M4A. Shoot, I probably, is that correct? Help me out here. You'd think I'd know that. It's a variant of the format used by Audible.com, the books on tape people. And that has two nice things going on. It has the ability to attach graphics to the file, and those graphics are placed at a timeline. So those timelines and those insertion of graphics become chapter markers. It's a really nice application, again, for education. You can actually, in iTunes, which is the only player, to my knowledge, that makes sense of these enhanced podcasts, you'll have a pull-down menu for the chapters. Those pull-down menus will have the little thumbnail images and, of course, the title of the chapter, so you can skip around in a podcast as well. I would say it's a matter of time before portable players will take advantage of that as well. So.
And I have a video iPod, and I also have that attachment that allows you to record the files right too. So anybody that wants to sort of experiment with it or play with it, call me and we can come down and, you know, I can show you the little wheel that revert, that fast forwards and we can do some of that recording and playing. And Guy's actually passing it around right now, so you can see that kind of thing. Kathy?
What you have up on the screen is just a little bar that, you know, and you're listening. Is it possible on that screen or opening up, on that screen, to have some text that would guide the person through what you're saying?
Not on an MP3, but with the iTunes U and with the capability that Guy's talking about, which I'm really excited about now, instead of just audio files, yeah, I'll be happy to attach PDF files, graphics, etc., and they will get those in their subscription.
They automatically come up in as you go through it.
What we're looking at here is an audio file on a web page. This is not a podcast. Any web browser will be able to play back an audio file. And curiously, many people who are producing podcasts will not only provide a feed that someone can subscribe to their podcast with iTunes or any other podcatcher, but they will also put those same daily shows or what have weekly shows up on a website, and you can just simply click and download as well. Now, that little click button would probably be embedded in a page that has the type of text and pictures and descriptions that you're referring to. And those are both fine choices, because there are some students who may want to subscribe with their portable player and listen, and maybe they want to do that part of the semester, maybe part of the semester they want to sit at a computer and just click and download. It's hardly any extra effort to do that. I would also argue that a good podcast uses two things. One is in podcast terminology, a web page that is referred to as show notes. That's kind of the terminology. And it kind of goes back to that blogging approach again, is if you have a page that with text and, you know, basically links and, you know, textual description about the audio file, that is helpful for your audience, but I would argue it's more helpful for Google to find your podcast. If you've got that web page out there with text, people can find audio content that they wouldn't bump into otherwise. The second thing that MP3 files give you the ability to do is to attach a rich amount of metadata to the MP3 file. That metadata is stored in as what are referred to as ID3 tags, and so you can add the basic metadata would be author information. And a lot of it kind of comes from the music industry, so you'll see album, genre, things of that sort. Lyrics, that's the latest version of the ID3 mechanisms includes a lyrics field, which has a pretty big bit a text area, so you can put quite a bit of text in that. Show description. So I really encourage people who are producing podcasts with the MP3s to take good advantage of that ID3 stuff, because the interesting thing about podcasting that you're more or less releasing your media into the wild. You know, it's people are downloading. I spoke earlier. This is not streaming files. This is not just files on a web. It's downloaded. And so I think it's very important that you attach, you know, the author, institution, as well as perhaps links back to some of those web pages with descriptive text, that sort of stuff, so that perhaps your file gets downloaded by somebody and then gets handed to somebody else or what have you. It's good to have that kind of, you know, the contact with the mothership attached to the file. Can also put the album art and things of that sort in it as well. So anyway, did I answer your question? About 12 ways from Sunday? So.
Okay, hi everyone. I'm Patricia Clark, and professor of digital media in the Interdisciplinary Arts and Performance Department. And listening to both Guy and Colleen talk about this, what we're looking at in terms of what I'm teaching my students, first of all, my students are creating content, okay? They are involved in creating websites that are not a typical web page, but are actually an art environment.
on the web. They're involved in creating digital video art, sometimes documentary, sometimes narrative, sometimes abstract. But what we've been taking a look at, well, let me back up. 2 years ago, I've been on the campus now for 4 years, and when I came into the department to come in to take over handling the media lab and to redefine some of the digital media courses that existed and also to create new ones to expand what we're doing with digital media, bring things up to the 21st century level, part of what I wanted to do was find a way to be able to put our students' work up and out on the web so that people would be able to see what our department was producing in the way of interdisciplinary arts and performance. So rather than diving into podcasting at this particular point as a tool for instruction, what I'm looking at is using it as a way to be able to do recruitment for the department, to engage students in a medium that they are already heavily participating in. If we found that if, like, and 2 years ago, Antonio Chang, incredible student, came to me in one of my classes and said, "Patricia, do you know about podcasting? Look what I've done." And he was doing it from the standpoint of having a blog, having the text, and then having links so that he would be able to serve up to anyone who came to his blog page examples of his video work. And this was really exciting to me. However, at that particular time, jumping through the hoops with the RSS documents and whatnot was not something that I was equipped or had the time to actually investigate to begin developing for my classes to participate in. But now with ASU on iTunes.U, is that right? But now with this, making it a little bit more easy because, you know, we're all busy as faculty people, and yet adding one more thing into what we're already doing is a little bit difficult to do, to find the time to learn yet one more thing. But because now this is going to make it easier for me, the instructor, to come up with a page or a way to serve our students' work out there, I'm very excited because now we can finally use this to create, and this is one thing I wanted to ask you, because right now ASU West campus and our college, we're redoing our websites to bring them up to the standard for ASU, you know, one university, many places, so that we have this consistent look on the web page. We were just talking in a faculty meeting yesterday on, well, how can we, with this new design and keeping consistent with the university webpage, find a way to be able to link to another situation that would allow us to show the student work? Now, I'm talking about very rich media in terms of not just audio, the audio work that people are doing, but their video projects. And that's why I was asking how many gigabytes, you know, how we're able to do this. So I'm going to be looking at, how can I compress my video files? How can I get the students' work up onto this so that we can use it not only as a way to get their work out there for their personal advancement once they're out of school or even while they're in school, but also how to create that page or that access point for other students who are out there looking around, getting on Google, and trying to find out, where's a program that I can go that does this type of work? And we're at that particular point now that we've developed our under division, our lower division courses. They're going through the university process right now, so that when our freshman students come in, they're in a four-year program. Prior to this, we were doing upper division, so we only started at the 300 level. But with those new freshmen coming in, a lot of them have their iPods. They are hooked up. They are on MySpace. They go to YouTube. They are going and using Google all the time, more so than the library, and to do their research. And they're doing, and even the elementary schools, high schools, and counselors are getting online to use Google to search for the different places that students would look at. So if we are out there on that and having a podcast that says, okay, here's new content this week, or here's new media this week, this is what the IAP events are for the season, this is what our new faculty has produced this semester in their research, then we're able to provide a window and media, current media, on what our students are producing, what the program is about, what faculty research is doing, and what our events every semester are. And it then puts a much more rich face on what the department has to offer incoming freshmen, incoming sophomores, and transfer students. So while I do see it also as a benefit for how I might teach and augment what I'm doing in the classroom, and this is something to consider, when I came in, teaching digital media is not easy, okay? Learning digital media is not always easy. And having only 2 hours and 45 minutes once a week with my students is not enough. So by being able to use the podcasting, I can augment, add to those instructor contact hours by using the podcasting to give them more time with me in a mode that they're already going to for their entertainment, for their getting together with their friends on MySpace. They're already used to going to the internet. So why not be able to have more contact hours with my students? When I can't have it physically, I can have it virtually with them. Okay, so two sides I'm looking at podcasting now as. One, my first goal is to get what we're doing up and out there, okay, and have a regular feed. So that's something I'm going to be working with this next semester to develop along with Dennis Marsolier, our brain and expert. Yes?
I was just curious because you talked about using MySpace with this. I was just curious, like, how do you see using this ASU on iTunes, you with MySpace, or how have you used it so far?
Not so much. Actually, we haven't used it, and not using it so much with MySpace. I use MySpace as an example of a place that students are already going to, establishing their blogs, loading up some of their videos that they've produced here in our department, and streaming them or allowing them to be downloaded. The issue of metadata then becomes extremely, extremely important for anything that we may decide in the IAP department to put up to be able to be downloaded. There are the copyright issues, and with that metadata, we need to have some form of protection. So right now, we're talking about, well, are we just going to stream, which is keeping everything and you can view it at a particular time or whatnot, stream it, but not let you download? Or if we do allow you to download, are we finding a way to have copyright protection on that particular work? Metadata will assist with that, but I'm not sure what other situations are involved with.
To go back to the specific question related to MySpace, we'll look in a moment in the step-by-step guide to iTunes U. Any podcast that's served off of iTunes U, you can have the URL, which looks like a very common web URL, that can be added, a link can be added to any web page, including MySpace. Now, that being said, we spoke earlier about the two flavors of podcasts that are served on iTunes U,
right.
Public content, private content. The public content is a fairly seamless click on the link, land at iTunes, and open up the file. If it's private content, it requires an ASU Write login procedure. So that you wouldn't probably use that sort of a link on a MySpace page,
right,
except for the public content.
Right.
And you can do it the other way around too. If Patricia sets up her own IAP?
Is that IAP, yeah.
IAP MySpace page, which I'm sure she does but won't admit to it. then you could link to that from within iTunes as well. There's ways that I'll show you that too.
Right. And now next semester I'm teaching a digital interactivity class, and this is the one where my students will be creating these art spaces, which we will have on the IAP server and post up there. Now students will be able to, what I want to find a way to do is, how do I link back from iTunes U to these various different pages? And how will I get these things to work so that we're able to not only allow downloadable videos and the audio things that they do, or documentation of projects that we've done or announcements, et cetera, how can I also find a way to let people link to these other aspects that we've done. I mean, it's very hard to have a downloadable website in a sense. So finding a way to be able to link and allow people to further investigate what we're doing is part of the research I want to conduct next semester, and also incorporate this into what my students are going to be doing in that digital interactivity class. All right, that will be a part of the assignment. You know, once you create this space, okay, now how are we going to get it out there? You know, what do we need to do to get people to come to your site, to look at your material? And I think that by having the podcast ability and different linking will allow us to put more of our material out on the web, make it more available for those who are searching for what we have to offer in our department. So that's kind of what I've got going.
This is just a general question for the panel here. I'm wanting to know if there's any other protection available in these files, these podcast files, because you can copyright it, but I'm sure there's a way to get that information and edit it and do whatever you want. Is there something in the file that you can encrypt or something that protects the file?
What you're referring to is DRM, Digital Rights Management. There are pretty much two very opposed camps to digital rights management. Those that obviously support the types of technology you're referring to and those that vehemently oppose it. At the present time, while iTunes, the commercial iTunes offers digital rights protected audio, music, iTunes U at this time does not offer that functionality, and we're told probably not for a year. So though it is, this point comes up, as you can imagine, and all universities across the land, people are concerned about their intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So if that is a concern for a professor who perhaps is not interested in giving out their lecture, that then podcasting is not for them. Mm-hmm. They would be better off, doing something along the lines of streaming. But as we know, even that has is only as tight as the smartest geek out there. So,
right.
So anyway, the technology is there. iTunes offers it through digital rights protected files, but at this time, it's not available in iTunes U.
And so that then is going to inform how soon our department will be able to actually safely put our work up and out there. But, until iTunes U came along, I was not interested at all because of the copyright issue, because the work that we are producing, especially from the faculty, the students are doing student work right now, and there's a little bit of wiggle room there, but they also don't want to have their material swiped, basically, there are different things that we can do, like putting watermarks on our videos and trying to, have something that is always there on the video that does show that it is copyrighted or belongs to someone else so that people can't easily reuse that material and call it their own. So there are little things we can do, but ultimately until the DRM situation is taken care of, it's going to impact how quickly I get something up and going. Because that is a big concern. I need to protect my students and also my fellow faculty members on terms of what they want to put out there. But I still do see this as an extremely valuable tool, especially for the artists. For all of you, but for the artists to have yet one more venue through which we can show what it is we do with new media and digital media. Because there is, when you say artists and you say technology, people go, how does this work? And yet this is where 21st century arts are going. It's not that we'll lose painting and sculpture and all of those other things because we're human beings and we want to touch, and we want to walk around it, we want to own it, we want this object. So that's never really going to go away. But this other world, the virtual world, the digital media world that our freshmen and our sophomores, even our transfer students live in. They are there. They are online. They are finding things. I can't necessarily keep up with all of the examples that my students are finding coming in saying, Patricia, did you see this new site? I have a list of about 130 different fine art sites that people have created that my students are out there finding, and we use these as examples of what are the possibilities for creating digital content for out on the web. With podcasting, it just opens up a whole new place for us to be able to show what we do. And so I see that as a really big, big benefit for the university, for the ideas of recruitment in your various departments, especially in some of those areas where recruitment maybe has fallen down lower. Having something like podcasting there as another avenue to get out what your department is doing is invaluable. You cannot really pay for that in here. This is free other than your time to put it together. It's free to you. So that's an amazing, amazing thing.
And that's a really important idea to get out, not just for, as Patricia is using it in the arts, but also as we could use it in education and instruction. If Duku's group would do a weekly podcast on good writing, where the, you know, 1 week it's what is a theme sentence and what, and those podcasts indeed would be available and interesting and could be used by writing programs anywhere.
Or
and
could
the
be
better
used.
Your weekly podcast is, the more people
right.
would subscribe to it and drive you to know that you have a lot of listeners and you'd be more interested in doing every Monday.
Right. The other thing about that is that within the course that you're teaching, like next semester, I'm doing this digital interactivity course where they're creating websites. If I know that someone else has a podcast like Duku on good creative writing or these different types of things, we can subscribe to that. We can listen to one of her lectures in
yeah.
my class to be able to, which is much like having a guest lecture in,
right.
but it's through the podcast. I am able then to be able to bring in another angle to hit my students with on a very good way to develop strong content. It's got to have good writing. Got to have a good idea, good writing, good digital work, and very good editing to put a solid piece together. And so the more resources I can tap into to use in my teaching, and this could be someone else's lectures necessarily, then we truly are doing interdisciplinary teaching.
Sorry, those English lectures are digital rights managed. You can't use them.
Yeah, well.
Kathy, you've been
we have a wave, you know. The nerdiest nerd, they come into my classes.
Kathy,
see,
you've
I want
been holding
that here.
A mic for quite a while.
But this is another way to be able to, you know, we're always struggling in the new college to define what is interdisciplinary teaching. Well, using podcasts would be a perfect way to be able to start getting that interdisciplinary flow of information into each class that you have. Not one instructor knows every single thing, but a group of us coming together with different podcasts can use each other's work to inform the course that we're teaching. And I think that broadens what we're able to deliver to the students.
Wait, Kathy?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
necessarily. I mean, we can, whatever we all want to do.
Okay, this is just a quick one that the idea about copyright has brought on, or that idea. My interest is in using digital media for students, meaning K-12 students,
mm-hmm.
but through the teachers I train, using digital media for people with disabilities.
Yes.
Okay, people who have difficulty reading, et cetera.
Right.
We now have technology that can take the printed text and turn
mm-hmm.
it into digital text.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a K-12 accessible textbooks law here in Arizona, where starting next year, all core curriculum materials will have to be in that format, but then
right.
you need a program to convert it. And these things will convert to MP3.
Ah.
Ah, okay. Now, my dream would be
then, yeah.
to be able to take a section that has to be read
mm-hmm.
to a reluctant learner,
mm-hmm.
which and to get it to his or her iPod.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want it out there for the world. I want to narrow who gets it.
Well, then wouldn't that be controlled by the ASU Right
yeah,
ID
exactly.
access?
Okay.
Your dream
could
be realized this afternoon, pretty much.
Okay. Because of the copyright issues.
No.
Well,
no,
once
it's released into the wild as an MP3 file, it could be copied and given to somebody else. That I'm not going to lie to you, that is.
Mm-hmm.
But the you do have through the mechanisms of iTunes U to restrict who can subscribe to it. So it's not a tall wall, but it is a bit of a block around the content.
Because according to the Chaffee Amendment, individuals with print disabilities can have access to this, but the world can't yet.
Right.
I mean, the legislation's working on that, but right now I'd be breaking the law if I put it out.
But given authentication, then the way the university defines how we can move our information out there to people who are authorized to use it is via authentication. So it's the same thing
with the
library e-reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Only students who can get into the course via authentication can get at that material, but certainly because they're PDFs, et cetera, that student could copy it and give it to someone else, but it is no longer in your hands. You have done what needs to be done to protect it from the outside.
And I wanted to ask two questions. The first one has to do with how you can integrate. I see what you did, Colleen, but I'm still a little confused about how you integrate Blackboard and iUniversity.
Okay.
I mean, iTunes University.
Was that your – okay.
I have a second question.
Okay, to answer your first question, you could build a Blackboard environment – much like you might today, that contains some readings and some discussion boards, but interactivity, homework assignments, that sort of thing. What's missing from that environment? The rich lecture, the sage on the stage that everybody hates, but we still constantly do. So you could produce those lectures even in the comfort of your office. You wouldn't necessarily have to be speaking to a class. Record a series of 20-minute lectures, and the feed to your lectures could be added as a link to in Blackboard or Sakai or what have you, just as another piece of content. And so you could have, a list of assignments. You might have the readings for this week, and here's the lectures for this week. That would be the easiest way to do it. So a person could actually click and download, or you would encourage them at the beginning of the semester to subscribe, and then they wouldn't have to be checking the web page every week to see if there's a new lecture. It would just be coming down automatically.
So could you explain?
You would subscribe to a channel, to a course, your course, your students would subscribe to your course. Every time you put up a new lecture, it would automatically be downloaded, assuming they're running iTunes on a regular basis. I mean, it's not going to just happen magically.
But not in Blackboard.
No.
But if they weren't running iTunes, you could make a link in Blackboard. So on week 7, when they had to do that assignment, either they had they connected to iTunes because they're plugged into iTunes all the time with their iPod, and it would download for them, or they go to Blackboard, they see week 7 because they have to submit and do things anyway, so they're going there for week 7, and the link is there that takes them to that.
Sure. And so that's what we were referring to earlier with Colleen's example, that it was a web. Actually, it was a Blackboard page with the MP3 file. So that the expenditure of time and energy is in producing the show. You might as well distribute it as many channels as you can, assuming you're not concerned with copyright. So if some people might want to subscribe with iTunes, some people might want to click for the web, some people might do different things, different parts of the semester.
And not everyone does have an MP3 player. I mean, not everyone yet does. Oh, sorry, I forgot about the recording. Not everyone does own that, but they do have access to a computer, so they can get to that page, they can get to that material. There does need to be an alternative for those people who don't own iPods or who don't have a Mac and go to iTunes. What is their option for getting there? Having the link through MyASU, where you're posting other things with the class, they're already geared to going towards there if that's how you've incorporated it in. So with the link there, then you're assured that they have a couple different ways to get to that material, which really does kill the excuse that my dog ate the homework. Well, sorry, you had a couple different ways to reclaim it.
It's more a statement than a question, but I liked your idea about how we could be interdisciplinary and share our resources. And I would just say that if you all, Alt-I could facilitate that so that we would just know who was doing what that we could integrate it.
Yeah, what were the lists?
We would be delighted to do that.
The iTunes is the directory at the present time of what's out there.
Okay.
And it's searchable. It's got a pretty good search engine on it as well. So if you're searching for English composition, and somebody's put up a show and they've put good ID3 metadata in their file, iTunes search it will find that. The other thing I wanted to echo on Patricia's idea about sharing resources is, much like a text-based blog, I think a podcast requires some consistent and regular updating of content, or no one's going to subscribe to either one.
Right.
And I've subscribed to a couple of different podcasts that I think utilize a pretty good strategy. They may get two or three or four people together who have a common interest in producing a particular show, and it's one person's responsibility each week to produce their chapter of the show. That way, no one's really burdened with having to get a show out every week, but yet your audience receives a show every week. And so I think that's a really good strategy. So if you've got several people in the English department or several people in the digital media department, and you come up with an idea to promote what you're doing and share the resources of production, I think that's a good strategy. So anyway.
Guy, as Meredith's been running this mic around, everyone had a question, led to the next question. Is there any plans for this university to start pre-wiring classrooms so that they will be podcast capable as soon as you walk in?
The downtown campus that we just built this semester, right? Those classrooms, the smaller classrooms have microphones mounted in the ceiling. That's more or less toward the front of the room. It's a single mic that captures both the professor and a decent job of the students as well. And that's definitely a push to make that happen, on a more regular basis. So
you do know we have a room here on this campus that's pre-wired, the CTEL PDS Tenant Learning Studio, Distance Studio. It's set up for, actually it's T1 transmission, archive video, ongoing courses where the teachers are here, students are all over the state. But I've got that studio totally pre-wired.
Excellent.
And they would pick up every word that was spoken.
Excellent. Well, now that being said, I think this application that we're doing today is a decent way to do a podcast production. We're recording an event. The other side of the coin would be to do a controlled podcast recording. Like I say, if you're perhaps doing a distance education class, you could record, assuming you'd written all your whole semester's worth of lectures, you could record them in a period of a few weeks and then just deliver them throughout the semester and only record that, the instructional content, which you might be able to boil down to, say, a 20-minute podcast versus a 40 or 50-minute podcast. So it's a little bit of a different way to look at it. Rather than tacking media onto an existing event such as this or a class, you actually are deliberately producing the event, I'm not saying one necessarily better than the other, but there is two ways to look at it. So, yes, you have another question?
Yeah, I have two questions. There wasn't really a date given when this will be available to classes. And also, what about for special events? Would the equipment still be available for special events? And, who would be supporting it, Alt-I or IT?
By a date, do you mean a date for iTunes U?
Yes.
iTunes U is available now, immediately. This equipment, someone else should probably speak a little bit about this.
This equipment that we have right now, there's a team right now that consists of both Alt-I and IT folks figuring out exactly how the service will be. It will definitely be available for instructional use. Whether this equipment or different equipment will be available for events is still being worked out. But in the testing phase that we're in right now, obviously we're using it for events as we are today, and it will be made available for instruction, and it should be ready by next semester. But there's a team working on it right now for this equipment, and whether or not this will be used for events or other equipment will be available for that, the team's still working on that. So we'll get you updates as soon as we have the final answer from the team.
Yeah, I have a question. I don't know if this is going to be in the how or today. As one of you had dealt with best practices, how long to make these podcasts. For example, you're talking about 40-minute podcasts, and that takes a lot of commitment to listen to a whole 40-minute podcast. If you're listening to podcasts from the radio, like from NPR or something, they're like minute to 5 minutes long, and that would fit into a guest lecturer kind of thing very, very well. So have you worked on a best practices kind of thing?
You know, the university this size and this diverse, there's going to a best practice for Patricia is going to be different than a best practice for you and for me. So I would say, you know, make it, the podcast need should be just as long as they need to be.
their ability to be able to rewind, to pause it, to resume where it was at when they walked away from it to go feed the cat or whatever, that is going to be available. So your lecture could be an hour and a half long. They're still responsible for the content, and they have the ability to sit for the hour and a half and listen to it or get up and down as they need to. So there's flexibility within it to be able to provide for that.
I would say, each of us, who, if you begin to produce a podcast, you start developing an audience, you'll find out what works for your audience and that's relevant to your content. And if you have an hour and a half guest lecture, and we've done this, we've sliced them up into, 30-minute chunks and delivered those as three episodes of a particular podcast. Right. Really, like I say, there's no good answer or right answer, I should say. So it would be driven by your content and your audience. Are you allowed to answer questions?
I'm allowed. I'm the facilitator. I'm going to answer a question. One of the things that I just wanted to add is that because this is rather new, we're actually working right now on compiling a list of top 10 to 20 instructional ideas for how to integrate podcasts into your classroom. Mm-hmm. And they fall into roughly three different categories: instructor developed, student developed, and then things that are out there that you can also integrate into your instruction. And so depending on the use, it has more to do with the kind of assignment that you develop and the kind of objective that you have for the student learning to determine how long those would be. So I know that's not an answer, but I do also want to point out that we're working to distribute those materials to get some more ideas out there beyond recording a classroom, recording a guest lecture, to help people think about some other ways to use this technology.
The unique thing about all of this is it's incredible flexibility, And that it's, like he said, what I'm going to do with our material and podcasting is going to be vastly different from what you might do. Even how I might end up using it in my instruction will be different. How long, what they're looking at, what other files they need to find, PDF files or how we're going to communicate, incorporating my ASU into that whole mix. So it's going to be different for everybody, but the great thing is that it has that much flexibility to it, which makes it so much more user-friendly for all of us,
Well, we have about 20 minutes, so we'll just, I want to just cover the basics to get you introduced to, if you're interested in doing a podcast or more specifically interested in doing, creating an iTunes U course/channel, we'll run through some of the basic steps of how to get that done. Now, of course, we're not going to get very far in 20 minutes, and so you're certainly welcome to contact me or David or any of us who, once you dive in and really get started, don't hesitate to give us a call. So, the first thing you need to do if you're thinking about setting up a iTunes U channel, and I'm going to interchange the word course and channel all the time, they're essentially the same thing. You need to determine who is a I'm sorry, actually, the first thing you need to determine is if it's public or private. We've pretty much covered that today. Is, are you producing a podcast that's going to be promoting what's going on in your department, or are you producing a podcast that you only want to be limited to perhaps a select group of students, or in the case of, the library, for example, maybe they have content that they need to limit to just members of the ASU community, i.e. those that have an ASU Write ID. So that might be the first thing. The second thing is determine who's going to carry the ball, who's going to be responsible for the care and feeding of this podcast, because that's a big one. I've seen, as I believe probably all of us have, text-based blogs, podcasts that they have a quick startup, they get a little bit of energy, but then they quickly phase out. Which is not to say that a podcast channel needs to go on forever. Perhaps you've got a workshop that you're doing, or like our MEC conference, for example. That's a three-day conference that we do in the spring. We do a podcast for many of those materials. So there may only be six or eight shows that people would receive if they subscribe. So I'm not saying that every podcast has to go on forever, but regardless, somebody needs to be responsible for it. And that everybody who is creating and distributing or uploading and producing iTunes U content has to have an ASU Write ID, and I'm going to show you why that's the case in a minute. The way iTunes U works, we are considering it part of the ASU distributed learning platform. iTunes U more or less is works under the mindset of being used for courses and instruction, although they don't have to be, and again, we've covered that. With that in mind, the mechanism that we use to distribute credentials of those who are creating and receiving iTunes U content is the same mechanism that we use to provide roles and credentials for Blackboard or Sakai, or you know, perhaps we have intentions to add you know the blogging and wiki as well. And that's the I'll show it to you in a minute. It's the myasu.edu/course request form that you use, just as if you were going to request a Blackboard course, you use that same web page to request an iTunes U course. Now, that's a relatively new mechanism as well. It's not as perfect as it needs to be. It's got some refining. For example, it's because it's very much driven as a course-related mechanism. There was no place for, say, the library, the president's office, to select an iTunes podcast because they don't belong to a college. And so we're working through that. Anyway, so the two primary roles that you are assigned to folks who are distributing or producing iTunes U courses are the instructor role, who is really the primary person responsible. Even if it's not a course, we have the instructor role. It's the producer, basically. And their assistant is the TA. The instructor within iTunes U has the ability to modify the iTunes U course, change the graphics, add additional tabs, upload, download content, delete content. They're pretty much, you know, they are administering the whole look and feel. A TA is, as you might imagine, has much limited responsibility. They're pretty much only able to upload and delete content. It's really just a housekeeping role. There are other roles that are assigned to iTunes U folks. The all role, it's a little bit of a, I'm not sure why it's termed that, but it's basically everybody in the world. So if you have iTunes U content, a podcast that's up there, and you've assigned the credential of all, everybody can download the file, that makes it a public podcast. If your all credential is restricted, then it becomes a private con. So that's basically the mechanism for determining what's public and what's private. That authenticated, unauthenticated, that kind of that's basically ASU Write ID, no ASU Write ID. So that's, you wouldn't have to have content restricted to just a course, but it could be restricted to, again, ASU Write ID holders. And for you, I don't know how familiar you are with the IDEAL project that we have. That, you know, we're certainly trying to get that ASU Write ID to be a much broader mechanism than we've typically thought of it. So it may certainly have something, relevance to some of the work that you're doing as well. Again, we're going to go fast. So this is, the URL for signing up and getting an iTunes U course. my.asu.edu/course request. Later on, I think I've got an S on the end of that, which is a typo, but that is the correct URL. I don't know why it's blue. Yes, ma'am.
What I understood you say so far is that to request a channel, you would have to use the course request
form. Correct.
Yeah, but if you wanted to do a departmental podcast, you wouldn't use the course request.
No, you would.
Form.
That's like I say, it's a little bit, I'm regretting that we've called this the course request form. And I think Apple's probably regretting calling their player iTunes because it's now delivering all kinds of media.
So if we were to do that, we just ignore the lines like scheduled line number,
correct,
course name, et cetera, and CEM will still accept
absolutely
the request, even if we don't have answers to the questions that we typically think are mandatory to answer.
Correct. I appreciate that. And that's the sort of thing that I refer to. We have some maturing to do on this course request form to address some of that and make it a little bit more clear. The simplest way to bypass, like, schedule line number, things of those sort, is one of the first options on the course request form. I think you pick course research, and then there's one tab that's development. That pretty much grays out all that other stuff. It's still a little bit confusing because you have to identify. There's a pull-down menu on that form to associate it with which college you're working in. For most of us, that's okay. Again, the library president's office, that became a little bit confusing. I don't want to say it's irrelevant, but it mostly doesn't matter what you pick there. And in fact, my guess is we're going to have a vast majority of the course requests from this form to be the Barrett's Honors College, because that's the first one, and if you don't pick anything, so it's really just for an internal reporting thing. But again, it's a brand new piece of software as well, so we would certainly take critiques and suggestions on how to make that as better too. But again, because iTunes is we're positioning it just like Blackboard or Sakai or what have you, this is the mechanism that you go through. And what's critical is by going through this mechanism, you're associating your ASU Write ID as the instructor to this iTunes course. So then when you go to iTunes to do your management, it negotiates with servers at ASU to find out what your credentials are, and it presents those rights and privileges to you. By the way, we're not passing anything other than the credentials. We're not giving ASU Write IDs and such out. It's a kind of a voodoo magic that happens, but basically there's good communication between Apple and ASU, and that was the tricky part to get all this work, by the way. So we've spoken about this as well. Not all podcasts need to be associated with an ASU course. And again, we need to make that more clearly articulated on the course request form. Don't think there's anything else there. There's the typo. Ignore that. What happens in this, right at the present time, when you go to the course request form, there's really only two choices, Blackboard or iTunes U. If you click on select a Blackboard course, Blackboard is mature enough to where that course gets created in more or less an automatic fashion. Actually, it goes through one other step where a human being looks at it and makes sure that it's not just some student saying, hey, I want to request a Blackboard course, because that's a common mistake to make. So there's a little bit of a human verification, but the bottom line is the course gets created more or less automatically. iTunes, that doesn't happen. Hopefully it will at some point when we spoke earlier about the exchange of code between Apple and ASU, where hopefully we'll be able to select, approve a course, and that course will get created automatically based on logical selections in the form. At the present time, what happens is it sends an email to a kind and loving UTO employee who will create this in a caring manner for you. And if the majority of the courses, we had a pretty big rush in the last 10 days or so. I think people are beginning to set up for spring. So the majority of them will be those private podcasts that are available for students. However, if you're interested in doing a departmental podcast, there's not so much of this that a few phone calls and emails can't take place and make sure that everything gets put into the place that you want it. So, and we'll do that. We'll contact you, make sure that things are working. Yes, ma'am. Oh, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So once you've created a course, you go to the itunes.asu.edu page. Have you all seen that page before? There's basically two buttons on that page, one that's marked public, one that's marked ASU Write. Public, as you might imagine, is same as clicking on a public link embedded somewhere. It just dumps you more or less right into iTunes to receive any content that's available with that all public credential. If you want to do the editing of your page, or you want to send your students to a private page, you have to go through the ASU Write button, which brings up a pretty simple login, you know, with ASU Write ID, and then it passes you on to iTunes. If you're a Macintosh user, this only works at the present time in Safari. We're not certain why that is the case, but and it's not an ASU thing, I might add. This is an iTunes U thing. It mostly has to do with the fact that Safari brings up this really long window and the button's off on somebody else's computer that says OK. If you haven't ever used Firefox before to do this, it seems to the latest version of Firefox, as long as it hasn't broken once, it seems to work okay. But it's still a little bit problematic. Let's see. We spoke a little bit earlier about putting links. You can copy a URL of your iTunes U page and place that on a Blackboard page or any other web page you want, and the same thing can happen. Clicking on a link that's directly to your content is the same as clicking on the ASU Write button. That dialogue between Apple and ASU happens either way. So if you want to embed a URL directly to your content in a Blackboard page, it'll still send you through that ASU Write process. And the same can be done with public content as well. If you want to obtain the link to your content, or any content, for example, you just right-click on anything, a file, a tab, a button, what have you, and you can extract that URL. It's pretty easy. iTunes is basically a web browser, and so all the links are very much like web links. In fact, they are. I'm not going to go into this right now, but we do have a posted PDF of some suggested equipment recommendations for doing podcast recording. I believe much of the equipment that we're using today was drawn from that list. It's really just a suggested list going from anywhere from the $10 microphone and free Audacity software up through a package similar to what we're using here today for doing presentation work like this. So it's available. Also, if you have if you're interested in doing iTunes U podcasting and interested in creating both audio and video content, Apple provides a really good PDF that you can download. This is probably an ugly URL. I need to change this. If you simply go to apple.com/support iTunes_U, it's just that simple, then you can find a pretty good variety of resources. This is directly to the user guide PDF. Yes. Real quickly, I mentioned that if you're interested in getting the support documents from Apple, you need to have an Apple ID. I'm not sure why they have it back behind that, but any iTunes, this is not an ASU Write ID necessarily. This is not at all, rather. It is an Apple ID in order to get in. I don't know why they have this back behind there, but they do.
Just really quickly, I wanted to mention, in addition to this equipment, there's podcasting equipment in the Instructional Technology Lab in the basement of the Fab Building. So if you want to go down and make a podcast and see what it's like and use the Audacity software to edit it and so forth, we have that capability for you. Also, on the new image that IT just produced, Audacity is pre-installed. It has the capability to make MP3s. So if you're getting a new computer or you're having your computer re-imaged, you'll have that software. If not, it's a free install. Anyone in IT will be happy to come out and help you set that up. By default, Audacity does not record MP3s. You've got to add a special feature to make it do that, and IT will be happy to help you with that if you get stuck. But it is on our new image, so if you get that on your system, Audacity will already be there waiting for you. And the cheap $10 mic solution then will just be a matter of plugging it in and recording till your heart's content. But if you want to take it for a test drive, we have both headsets and standalone mics like these in the ITL. You can go down and do a podcast if you like and see what that's like for you, in addition to this equipment that IT has that we're going to be delivering for classes hopefully in the spring. I'm Mark, and I'm Mark
last,
Cohen. Yeah,
last name.
Right. I'm Mark Cohen, and I'm the manager of Deskside Technology Services in IT. So if there's anything I can do, just let me know.
May seem a bit overwhelming to create a channel in iTunes, especially if it's a month from now or 2 months from now, but Alt-I, IT, and the tech support people in your colleges, we're going to all get more and more plugged into this and try to move this forward. So you've got lots of resources and help to do that. And having said all that, there is the screen up here for more info if you want to write to us.
Yes. I was just getting a little anxious. I didn't see my iPod and PSP.
Coming back. Our risk of any workshops.
Obviously we're more or less out of time, but we will quickly bring up iTunes. But, you know, call either me or David, and we can get you going as well. And that would be the bottom line, is that this is an emerging thing. It's not, you know, a product of UTO. It's all of ours, so we want to make it as good as possible. And I would also say, on the documents that I'm pointing you to, on the Alti site and the, you know, anything that doesn't make sense, do not hesitate to let me know, because we want to make this as clear and simple as possible.
Meredith has a question.
I have another comment.
Comment?
I just want to add to that we will, somebody will be offering a how-to workshop in the spring on how to actually request the courses. This was just an overview. Now, what I'm going to add, though, is that there are three of us on this campus who are here for people who want to get going. It's hard for us to schedule things over the break because people tend to not be here. So there are three of us who are here, and if people are interested in getting going, we'll send out an email after the workshop with our contact information, and we're ready, you know, whenever you guys are, to work with people one-on-one, which is a nice opportunity for those of you who are ready to start.
And as we said in the beginning, this, you were our guinea pigs. We are experimenting with the idea, with the introduction of technology. We have found it ineffective if we don't understand what it is and why to use it, to leap right into how-tos. And we've had some, you know, difficult times with that, where we just throw you into a workshop and get you to start pressing buttons without any sense of what you're going to produce or how that is. So please, if we don't have your email address, put it down on the paper, because we'll be asking for feedback on how we could make the what and why workshop more effective for you, and then how then to, from there, roll out into part two, which is the how, once you've created, you know, some ideas for your content and where you would use it and what it would be and et cetera. So please let us know.
Well, see that little guy right there? That's them. We're not, for some reason, I'm not actually logging in right now. I don't know why. But we're in at the public interface right now. Just, I don't know if any of you have had an opportunity to see this yet. This is essentially what you see as a public viewer, and we'll see if this login happens. It doesn't look too good right now. The basic structure of iTunes U is you have this main front page. Each page has sections. These little red areas are considered sections. And within the sections, ideally, we're having welcome page, which would be another layer down. And so, for example, you might have let me find a decent welcome page. I believe there's actually one here. I think so. Nope. Yeah, so this is a welcome page. And then within the welcome page, it's structured the same as the front page, where you have sections, and then you can't go another welcome page down. You actually have the podcast at that point. But you can organize it in such a way. So you may, a department or a college that may want to put together their front door welcome page, and then there may be individual courses, programs, what have you, that would have either individual welcome pages or podcasts. Once you get into a podcast, there's also another layer. Let's see how far we can get here. The default when you get your course set up is you have an audio tab and a video tab. Those are simply just default names. Those could be called anything we want, any type of file. We just had to put something in there. So each one of these is a tab, and for all intents and purposes, each one of these tabs is a separate podcast. I can subscribe to just, actually that's not entirely true, you would subscribe to the whole thing. You can change the names of these tabs, you can add additional tabs to them. Some people have thought it might be good to have a different tab for every section of, maybe have one podcast for English 102, but then have a different tab for every section, for example. And how you structure it is really up to you, but that's, you know, basically how it works. But we are more or less out of time, and I don't want to keep maybe we'll just open up if there's any last minute questions or I'm welcome, happy to stage. I don't want to step on your all's time, though.
We want to thank everybody for coming today, especially because it's reading day and right before finals. So if you have any other questions, we'll stick around for a few minutes afterwards, and we'll send out a follow-up email with some of the information that people requested, and we'll be in contact for the spring. So, and please, really, if anybody has any questions or want to get started, we're here to help.
Great. Thanks.